is Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue on KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham and KGMI.com.
Welcome to Wealth Wake Up. Dick Donahue with you this Sunday morning here on KGMI. Well, today we're going to start out with our weekly commentary and talk about the worst malinvestment. Austrian Economics argues that growth comes from innovation and entrepreneurship, with the market directing resources to areas of the economy that provide the greatest returns. It also observes that when governments use interest rates, subsidies, taxes, or other types of market interference, it can cause malinvestment or investment in areas that wouldn't receive market support. This leads to losses and wasted resources. And while there are many examples of this as government has become bigger and more unaccountable, recent events on many college campuses around the U.S. show some of the worst malinvestment our country experiences year in and year out. Public universities certainly don't run like capitalist institutions, but neither do private colleges like the Ivy League. And while people complain about all kinds of corporate welfare, what about university welfare? The 8 Ivy League schools, plus Northwestern and Stanford, all private, received $33.1 billion in grants and contracts from the federal governments between 2018 and 2022, in data calculated by Open the Books. Meanwhile, the government has given $1.6 million, or $1.6 trillion, in loans to young people to buy the services of schools and their academics. And although these loans are sold as a good thing for young people, we think the main effect is to create jobs for and support the wages of academics who get to pocket the money, whether their work leads to new inventions and innovation or a disdain for freedom, capitalism, and America itself. Yes, it's certainly true that most people with high-paying jobs have gone to college, but as George Mason, economist Brian Kaplan found, a college degree isn't actually the cause. They earn more because they often are highly intelligent. They're very conscientious or willing to conform to a corporate culture. Sometimes all three. So unless you're pursuing a degree in something where you need it to a specific body of knowledge, like medicine or engineering, going to college likely just signals natural intelligence, conscientiousness, and corporate conformity, not important knowledge. In return, Preston Cooper of freeop.org has researched about 30,000 bachelor programs around the country, found that more than 25% of the programs experience a negative return on investment, which certainly helps explain why so many people feel burdened by student loans. And going to a very selective school is no guarantee of a positive ROI. We can't help but wonder if these economic realities and evidence of malinvestment aren't at least partly responsible for the turmoil on college campuses. After all, malinvestment leads to slower long-term economic growth, which undermines growth in living standards. More debt and less growth are a recipe for bad outcomes. We aren't positive everyone will see it this way, but the data and reality on the ground seem to be saying that the U.S. ought to find a way to separate academia and government. One key item, which we have mentioned before, is that universities and colleges should be on the hook for all, or at least a portion of unpaid student loans. And why does the federal government give billions of dollars to schools who have massive and untaxed endowments? Any action which reduces malinvestment will lead to better outcomes for all. And let's take a look at our global roundup for the week. We're finding that Fed rate hikes fears are starting to vanish. Global equities were higher on the week as fears over the potential of the U.S. Federal Reserve to shift gears towards rate hikes vanished. The yield on the U.S. 10-year Treasury note fell 17 basis points on the week to 4.5%, while the price on a barrel of West Texas Intermediate crude oil fell to $78.75 from $84. Volatility as measured by the CBOE Volatility Index, or VIX, fell to 13.8 from 15.4 last Friday. And looking at some of our macro news, the softer-than-expected payrolls send U.S. yields lower. Markets breathed a sigh of relief on Friday morning as yields on U.S. Treasuries tumbled after April non-farm payrolls grew a less than expected 175,000. The number fell considerably short of the 240,000 consensus forecast, and the prior 2 months reading was revised down by 22,000. The unemployment rate rose to 3.9%, up 0.1% from March, while average hourly earnings grew less than anticipated. Along with a rise in job openings, data released earlier in the week, investors are seeing signs that tightness in the labor market is easing. After this data, markets were quick to price in a second rate hike by the Fed before the end of the year, with the first fully priced for September. Additional soft data were reported mid-morning on Friday as the Institute of Supply Management's non-manufacturing index fell to 49.4. That's the lowest reading since December of 22. And Fed's Powell says that the rate hikes are unlikely ahead of Wednesday's press conference following the latest Federal Open Market Committee meeting. Markets were primed for a hawkish hold with a series of hotter-than-expected inflation prints. Instead, Fed Chair Jerome Powell said it is unlikely that the next policy move will be a hike and that rate cuts remain in the Fed's base case only later than expected. Additionally, the FOMC voted to slow the pace of quantitative tightening by more than expected beginning in June, allowing $25 billion worth of treasuries to roll off the balance sheet from the current $60 billion a month. Markets expected a $30 billion a month pace. Powell said he remains confident that inflation will moderate over the balance of the year, though he is less confident than he was earlier. The post-meeting FOMC statement acknowledged that there has been a lack of further progress towards the committee's 2% inflation goal in recent months. Markets rallied strongly after Powell took hikes off the table, though the gains faded away late in Wednesday's session and stocks closed lower on the day, though they rallied on Thursday and early Friday. And the Bank of Japan acts to stabilize the yen. The Bank of Japan intervened several times this week to try to halt the yen's rapid slide. On Monday, the currency fell to 160.17 versus the U.S. dollar, which was a fresh 34-year low. It recovered to 132.35 or 152.35 after the authorities purchased nearly $60 billion worth of yen on foreign exchange markets during the course of the week and on Friday's news that the growth of the U.S. payrolls has slowed. Wide interest rate differentials, particularly between Japan and the U.S., have helped undermine the yen. On Thursday, it was reported that Japanese authorities are considering tax breaks on the repatriation of Japanese corporate profits held overseas, which would prompt companies to buy yen, creating a capital inflow. While Japan has substantial U.S. dollar-denominated currency reserves, selling them would require the Bank of Japan to liquidate some of its holdings in U.S. treasuries, potentially pushing up U.S. yields and exacerbating the interest rate differential, which illustrates the difficulty that Japan faces in stabilizing the yen if it does not adjust monetary policy to narrow the U.S.-Japan rate gap. And some of our quick hits for the week, the U.S. employment cost index rose 1.2% quarter over quarter in the first quarter, more than the consensus that forecasts of a 1% rise. It was the largest gain in a year, fueling sticky inflation fears. And the OECD raised its 2024 global growth forecast to 3.1% from earlier 2.9% projection, noting more optimistic outlooks for the U.S., China, and India. Its 2024 forecast is 3.2%. Amid solid earnings growth, Goldman Sachs raised its forecast of U.S. stock buybacks to $925 billion. That's a 13% year-over-year increase. The firm also forecasts that the stock's 600 companies will return 5% of their market cap via dividends and buybacks this year. Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up here on KGMI. We'll be right back.
It's time for the Great Haircut Sale at your local Great Clips Salon. Your chance to get a great haircut at an even greater price, just $14.99. And money's not all you'll save at Great Clips. When you use online check-in, you can save time too. So download our app today and hurry in for the $14.99 Great Haircut Sale at Great Clips. It's going to be great. For a limited time at participating salons.
The $14.99 Great Haircut Sale runs May 3rd through May 6th.
This Thursday with PNW Perks, you can save big with Zazen Salon Spa. Spend $50 and get $100 to use on any service like facials, massages, haircuts, and so much more. Transform your routine at Zazen Salon Spa with PNW Perks this Thursday. Experience a world of pampering and rejuvenation with their luxurious hair care, vibrant coloring, and indulgent treatments like massages, facials, and body wraps. Enhance your beauty with their expertly crafted extensions, waxing, and detoxifying treatments. Step into a haven of relaxation where every service is tailored to revitalize your mind, body, and spirit. Whether it's a refreshing manicure or a soothing pedicure, they've got you covered from head to toe. Escape the hustle and bustle of daily life and immerse yourself in our nurturing spa oasis. Book your appointment now and treat yourself to the ultimate spa experience. Located next to the Hotel Bellwether and at ZazenSalonSpa.com. Thursday at 8 a.m., get a $100 gift certificate to Zazen Salon Spa for just $50 only at PNWPerks.com.
Get informed and inspired with Saturday Morning Live on KGMI. Join a group of knowledgeable hosts as they present a variety of guests and viewpoints on issues important to our area and to you and your family. Sponsored by Asset Advisors LLC, each Saturday from 8 to 9 a.m. on KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham, and streaming live at mybellinghamnow.com.
The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KGMI or the Cascade Radio Group.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up. Dick Donahue with you this Sunday morning here on KGMI. We're Asset Advisors. We're located out on the Pacific Highway in the Pacific Commerce Center, about halfway to Ferndale, north of the Slater Road on your right. And our address is 5060 Pacific Highway, Suite 101, Ferndale, 98248. Our phone number, 360-733-1200. And check out our website at wealthwakeup.com. And as I announced on yesterday's show, I have for my four tickets and parking pass available for the next homestand for the Mariners for the games on Friday the 10th, Saturday the 11th, Sunday the 12th, and Monday the 13th. The Friday, Saturday, and Monday games are at 6:40 p.m. Friday and Saturday are against Oakland. Sunday is against Oakland, but it's at 1:10 in the afternoon. That happens to be Mother's Day. And then the 13th, which is Monday, is a 6:40 p.m. game against Kansas City. So if you're interested, give us a call. I'll get back to you on Monday, 360-733-1200. Okay, continuing on with our global roundup for the week, the U.S. Treasury is going to borrow $243 billion during the second quarter. That's $41 billion more than its late January estimate. The third quarter borrowing estimate is $847 billion. The department will increase bill auction size in the coming days while keeping bond auction sizes steady in May to the July quarter. A program to buy back off-the-run treasuries to increase liquidity is set to begin on the 29th of May. And the Canadian economy grew weaker than expected, 0.8% year over year in February. China's Politburo this week signaled both support for the country's ailing property sector and a willingness to cut interest rates. Officials will research ways to deal with unsold properties and make flexible use of tools to support the economy and lower overall borrowing, the official Xinhua News agency reported on Tuesday. And Taiwan's economy expanded at the fastest pace in almost 3 years in the first quarter as the demand for artificial intelligence boosted tech exports. Also this week, South Korea reported a rise in exports due to foreign demand for semiconductors and autos. With more than $38 billion worth of U.S. office buildings are threatened by defaults, foreclosures, or other forms of distress, according to the MS Morgan Stanley. That's the highest amount since the aftermath of the global financial crisis. And the Case-Shiller U.S. National Home Price Index rose 4.4% year-over-year in February. And the Conference Board's Consumer Confidence Measure slumped to 97 in April from a downward revised 103.1 in March. Secretary of the Treasury Janet Yellen warned that the U.S. needs to take significant steps to reduce its budget deficit. We just mentioned that, didn't we? And the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration has begun the process of reclassifying marijuana as a less dangerous drug. And on Thursday, Turkey halted all trade with Israel. And on Tuesday, the U.S. Congress passed a bill to ban the import of enriched uranium from Russia. President Biden is expected to sign the measure into law. We also saw Brazil's sovereign credit rating was affirmed at Ba2 by Moody's, and the credit rating agency lifted the country's outlook to positive from neutral on stronger economic growth. And according to the most recent U.S. job openings and labor turnover survey, better known as JOLTS, the number of job openings declined in March to the lowest level in 3 years to 8.5 million. That's from an upwardly revised 8.8 million, a sign of cooling demand for labor. The quits rate fell to 2.1%, which is the lowest level since August of 2020, as workers are deciding to stay put rather than seek greener pastures. And the U.S. manufacturing sector slipped into a mild contraction in April, according to the Institute of Supply Management's Manufacturing Index. The measure declined to 49.2 in April from 50.3 in March, though its prices paid index jumped to 60.9, which was its highest level since June of 22. And according to Pew Research Center survey, as many as 42% of Americans said see China as an enemy of the U.S. That's up from only a quarter 2 years ago. And on Thursday, Argentina slashed official interest rates to 50% from 60%. Radical efforts to cut government spending could see inflation below 10% month over month in April. President Javier Milei said this week that interest rates were pegged at 133% when he took office in December. And looking at earnings news, with about 80% of the constituents of the S&P 500 index having reported for the first quarter of 24, blended earnings per share, which combined reported data with estimates for those that have yet to report, shows the earnings slightly rose around 4.9% compared to the same quarter a year ago, according to data from FactSet. Sales growth is up 4.1% year-over-year, according to Bloomberg. That's about 80% of reports have beaten the estimates that we've been looking at. And let's take a look at our in-depth April employment report. The labor market fell short of consensus expectations in April, with slower job growth, slower wage growth, and fewer hours worked. This will not get the Federal Reserve back on track for rate cuts this summer, but could, if followed up with a few months of softer inflation readings, put the Fed in position for a potential rate cut this fall. Non-farm payrolls grew 175,000. That was below the consensus expected 225,000 and the slowest pace for any month since so far in 2024. We like to follow payrolls excluding government because it's not the private sector. Education and health services because it rises for structural and demographic reasons and usually don't decline even in recession years. And leisure and hospitality, which is still recovering from COVID lockdowns. The core measure of payrolls rose a modest 67,000 in April, also the slowest pace so far this year. Meanwhile, civilian employment, which is an alternative measure of jobs that includes small business startups, increased the modest 25,000. As a result, the unemployment rate ticked up to 3.9% for the month. Much has been written lately about whether the immigration surge in the border is a force behind solid continued job growth. If so, you'd expect job growth in the payroll survey to beat the growth of civilian employment, which is based on the survey of households that probably fails to measure the illegal immigrants. That's consistent with past years, as payrolls have grown at 2.8 million, while the employment measure is up only about 500,000. The alternative measure for the general trend of slower employment growth is what news on the market included, a 0.1% decline in total hours worked and a modest 0.2% increase in the average hourly earnings, which were now up 3.9% versus a year ago. That's the smallest gain since 2021. The Fed will continue slower growth in wages. For the problem for workers is that inflation is running hotter than the 0.2% month per month. So the most recent gains in wages likely means declining inflation-adjusted purchasing power. And we'll look at the March's international trade deficit in goods and services shrank slightly to $69.4 billion in March as imports declined more than exports. However, we prefer to focus on the total volume trade, imports plus exports, as it shows the extent of business and consumer interaction across the U.S. border. This measure fell substantially in March, declining by $10.7 billion. Total trade volume is up only 1.7% from a year ago. Exports flat versus a year ago, while imports are up 3.1%. Notably, there's a major shift going on in the pattern of U.S. trade. Though the first 3 months of the year, imports from China were down 2% versus the same period in 23 and down 28.9% versus the same period in 22. China used to be the top exporter to the U.S. Now the top spot is held by Mexico, as China has fallen number three, with Canada now in second. Meanwhile, global supply chain pressures have eased substantially over the last few years. This is confirmed by the New York Fed's Global Supply Chain Pressure Index in March, with confirmed the index, although still negative, only down 0.27% standard deviations below the index's historical average. For some perspective, 2 years ago in the month of March, the index sat at 2.81 standard deviations above the historical average. Expect some temporary volatility, though, as Yemen's rebels continue to deter container ships from transiting the Red Sea, adding volatility to shipping costs. Also, the report, the dollar value of U.S. petroleum exports exceeded imports again for the 25th consecutive month of the U.S. being a net exporter of petroleum products. In other news, non-farm productivity grew at 0.3% annual rate in the first quarter. Output rose at a 1.3% rate, while hours worked rose 1% rate, so output per hour grew. Productivity is up 2.9% from a year ago. Meanwhile, unit labor costs rose by a 4.7% annual rate in the first quarter and are up 1.8% from a year ago. Also reported, initial unemployment claims were unchanged for the week at 208,000. Continuing claims were also unchanged at 1.774 million. Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up here on KGMI. We'll be back shortly.
We don't have the usual traffic jams that they have in the big city, but sometimes things happen to snarl everything up. Depend on KGMI to keep you cruising to your destination with KGMI traffic alerts. We'll tell you where the trouble spots are, and if you see problems on the road, give us a call at 360-676-5464 so we can spread the word. KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM, and KGMI.com.
Every day, KGMI brings you the latest news and information, and we also give you a chance to express your opinion on a major news story of the day.
Go to MyBellinghamNow.com anytime and take part in our daily news poll to see what others are thinking and add your voice.
We'll have an update during the KGMI afternoon news, and we'll give you a final tally and a new question each day during the KGMI morning news.
Be part of the conversation with the KGMI daily news poll, another informative and free feature from KGMI and MyBellinghamNow.com.
Have you really sat down and taken a good look at how much you're paying for home and auto insurance? I'm Derek Barnes, and by now you might know that my wife Denise and I own D&D Insurance in Ferndale. Over the years, we've seen individuals paying $300, $400, and sometimes $500 a year too much for their home and auto insurance. If we're going to be good stewards of the money provided to us, I think it's prudent we review our insurance and financial needs. Likewise, we've been given families to take care of, and if something untimely were to happen to us, it's good to know that we can still provide for our families even when we're not around. Life insurance gives us that opportunity. Don't put it off for another day. pick up the phone and start making some wise choices. Call the agents at D-Insurance. They'll point you in the right direction. 392-8159 or visit us online at dndinsurance.com. We look forward to meeting you.
Hey guys, don't be that dad without life insurance. When thanks to Ethos, you can be that great dad with life insurance to help keep his family living exactly like they do now, secure and protected in the event of the unexpected. With a fast and easy online experience, some policies as low as $1 a day and up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam, just a few health questions. Ethos makes getting life insurance protection hassle-free. E for easy, E for Ethos at checkethos.com. That's checkethos.com.
I'm Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I learned about atrial fibrillation the hard way. My symptoms would come and go, shortness of breath, fatigue. I kept going. Then I got so lightheaded, I couldn't. My doctor said I have AFib, so I'm about 5 times more likely to have a stroke. Other symptoms, irregular heartbeat, heart racing, chest pain, can come and go, but the risk of stroke stays. If you have symptoms, tell a doctor. Visit notimetowait.com.
Sponsored by Bristol-Myers Squibb and Pfizer.
KGMI wants to put a grand in your hand. You could be one word away from a chance to win $1,000.
That's right. Just listen each weekday to KGMI for the keyword during the 8 a.m., 11 a.m., 2 p.m., and 5 p.m. hours.
Then go to the Grand in Your Hand contest page at mybellinghamnow.com before midnight and enter each keyword for your chance to win $1,000.
We'll have 4 keywords each weekday so you can increase your chances of winning by entering all 4 every day we play the contest.
You already listen to KGMI for the latest local news and discussion of the latest issues. Now you can win $1,000 while you do it.
A Grand in Your Hand is brought to you on KGMI by Niederhaus of Luxury, Whatcom County's newest fine jewelry store, next to Lombardi's on Bellwether Way.
A Grand in Your Hand is back on KGMI.
Get details at mybellinghamnow.com.
Whatcom County and Northwest Washington offer endless beauty, and our phones make it possible for us to capture it instantly.
And now KGMI is giving you another way to share your incredible pictures with Whatcom Wanderings.
Just go to KGMI.com, look for Whatcom Wanderings, post your photos, and tell us where you took them.
So share your pictures of our area's incredible beauty and complexity with Whatcom Wanderings at KGMI.com.
Let's take a moment to breathe. Deep inhale. Extend your spine. Remain focused on what you're doing. If safe to do so, exhale slowly, leaning to one side. Inhale back to center. If safe to do so, exhale slowly to the opposite side. Find mental health resources at loveyourmindtoday.org. This message is brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ed Council.
The latest local news and important topics of the day from the West Mechanical Studio.
Rest easy in a cool home this summer. Contact West Mechanical Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical to add AC to your existing system for as little as $140 a month. Find them at westmechanical.net.
Get the latest news and information 24/7 with KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham. Streaming live at mybellinghamnow.com.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up. Dick Donahue with you this Sunday morning. Going to continue on with our economic reports that came in this week. And we saw the April ISM Manufacturing Index report also come out. And after a brief one-month stint above 50, the ISM Manufacturing Index missed its consensus expectations and fell to 49.2 in April. Activity in the U.S. manufacturing sector has now contracted for 17 of the last 18 months. Looking at the details of the report, half of the 18 major manufacturing industries reported growth in April, with 7 reporting contraction and 2 reporting no change. Both demand and production were responsible for a drop in overall index, with the index for production softening to 51.3, and with new orders index falling back into contraction territory at 49.1. This marks the 18th month in the last 20 where the new orders index has been below 50. With production skating along and demand dragging, companies have turned to reducing their order backlog. That index, which currently stands at 45.4, has been in contraction for 19 consecutive months. Survey comments from manufacturing companies remain mostly optimistic about their backlogs that can get them through the end of the year, while conditions are expected to improve. But despite this optimism, demand remains weak. Looking at the big picture, goods-related activity is artificially boosted during the COVID lockdowns, but then the economy reopened and consumers started shifting their spending preferences back to services and away from goods. The ISM index peaked in the last month. Federal stimulus checks were sent out in March of 21, has been weaker ever since. Meanwhile, its counterpart survey on the services sector, which is the ISM Services Sector Index, keeps chugging along. The worst part of the report came from the highest reading of any category. That's the Prices Paid Index, which jumped to 60.9 in April. Inflationary pressures have been on the rise in the manufacturing sector this year, as comments about increasing costs are showing up once again in the report after being absent for most of 23. This is not a welcome sign for the Fed, as the goods sector was a key driver for lower inflation readings this year. In other news, ADP's measure of private payrolls increased 192,000 in April versus consensus expected 183,000. And meanwhile, construction spending declined 0.2% in March as a large drop in home building more than offset increases in highway and street projects as well as educational facilities. And finally, on the housing front, home prices rose in February with the National Case-Shiller Index up 0.4% and the FHFA Index jumping 1.2%. In the last 12 months, these indices are up 6.4% and 7% respectively. We also have the April ISM Non-Manufacturing Index. And there, the index missed consensus expectations. It fell into contraction territory for the first time in 16 months. Although the service sector has not matched the same weakness as the manufacturing sector, which has posted readings above 50 in 17 of the last 18 months, activity has been softening lately. Looking at the details of the report, 12 major service industries reported growth in April, while 6 reported contraction. The drop in overall index was a result of slower growth in business activity and new orders, with these indices declining to 50.9 and 52.2 respectively. Survey comments noted tempered activity coming in part from slowing markets and soft business activity, and in part from concerns over inflation and geopolitical impacts on our supply chains. Hiring activity also looks to be cooling as the index moved deeper into contraction territory in April and now below 50 for 4 of the last 5 months. Although labor tightness remains a key issue for hiring and for the short supply, labor costs have been reported higher for 41 consecutive months. Only 5 major industries reported an increase in employment in April versus 10 industries reporting a decline. Inflation remains a major problem. Prices continue to rise in the service sector, and the pace accelerated in April. And although the index, which currently stands at 59.2, is below the back-breaking pace from 21 and 22, 14 industries reported paying higher prices in April, and not one reported paying lower prices. So what do we expect this year? Well, we expect continued weakness in services activity and the economic morphine from COVID wears off, and the impact of the recent reductions in M2 measure of the money supply make their way through the economy. The service sector was a lifeline for growth in 23. Further deterioration in this sector could be the harbinger for tougher economic times ahead. And as we mentioned earlier, we had the Federal Reserve meeting that ended on Wednesday of this week, and their report came out with a lack of confidence. We saw no shortage of things to discuss after the Fed statement and subsequent press conference. And while the Fed did not cut rates and nobody expected them to, the focus was on how the Fed will respond to a turn higher in inflation to the start of 24. But for all these questions, there was a distinct lack of clear answers. So let's take a look at the Fed statement, which included more changes than usual. In particular, a new sentence was added noting that there was a lack of further progress towards committee's 2% inflation objective. Meanwhile, although the Fed did not cut rates or even signal that they're considering doing so at any time soon, they did take what some considered an easing action in the form of an announced slowdown in the pace of quantitative tightening. Starting in June, the Fed will reduce the monthly cap on Treasury redemptions from $60 billion per month down to $25 billion per month, while keeping the redemption cap of the agency debt and agency mortgage-backed securities at $35 billion a month. Why slow the pace of a balance sheet normalization at the same time that they state that progress towards lower inflation is stalled? Well, during the press conference, Powell made clear that the Fed views rates as the Fed's primary tool in battling inflation, and the moderation in the pace of QT is meant to reduce financial market risk as they normalize their balance sheet, it should be noted that the Fed does not expect their balance sheet will now end at a higher level with the reduced monthly roll-off, only that it'll take longer to get back to normal. So throughout the press conference, Powell was peppered with questions on the chance further hikes would be needed. While not definitively ruling a hike out, Powell was very clear that the Fed believes that the current monetary policy is already tight enough to get inflation lower and that they anticipate the next move will be a cut. How long do we have to wait for that to cut? Nobody, certainly not the Fed, knows. And as it stands, we would rule out June for a cut, barring a significant deterioration in the economy. July can also prove too soon for sufficient confidence to build. If that's the case, the Fed's path towards 3 rate cuts as projected in their March dot plots means that each of the last 3 meetings in 24. But more likely, and unless economic weakness shows its head, the Fed will keep rates higher for longer than they have been forecasting in 24. Better a hawkish Fed than a dovish Fed until inflation battle is won. The potential for reigniting inflation through action that is too early or too aggressive, as the Fed showed in multiple occasions under Chairman Arthur Burns in the 1970s, is not a risk that we should be willing to take. The economy is still growing, and we think the risk of recession is higher than market participants are currently pricing in. It is simply too soon for the Fed to take action. And I've got a question here about when does old age really begin? New study reveals shifting perceptions across different generations. A recent study published by the Psychology and Aging found that people's perception of when old people or old age begins has shifted in older ages compared to previous generations. Researchers analyzed data from 14,000 participants in the German Agent Survey born between 2011 and 14. They found that the later born participants reported a later perceived onset of old age than earlier born participants. For example, those born in 56 said old age begins at 74 on average when they're 65. Those born in 1911 perceived old age as starting at 71 when they were 65. However, the trend of perceiving old age is starting later this shown in recent decades. As individuals age, their perception of when old age begins also has increased. At age 64, participants said old age started at 74.7 on average, but at 74, they perceived it's starting at 76.8, an increase of about 1 year for every 4 or 5 years of actual aging. So the study suggests several factors contributing to this shift, including increased life expectancy, improved health in later life, and changes in retirement age. Women tended to perceive old age as starting later than men, and those with poorer health or loneliness perceived it as starting earlier. Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up here on KGMI. We'll be back shortly.
Have you really sat down and taken a good look at how much you're paying for home and auto insurance? I'm Derek Barnes, and by now you might know that my wife Denise and I own D&D Insurance in Ferndale. Over the years, we've seen individuals paying $300, $400, and sometimes $500 a year too much for their home and auto insurance. If we're going to be good stewards of the money provided to us, I think it's prudent we review our insurance and financial needs. Likewise, we've been given families to take care of, and if something untimely were to happen to us, it's good to know that we can still provide for our families even when we're not around. Life insurance gives us that opportunity. Don't put it off for another day. Pick up the phone and start making some wise choices. Call the agents at D&D Insurance. They'll point you in the right direction. 392-8159 or visit us online at dndinsurance.com. We look forward to meeting you.
Hey, at our startup, my team and I move at the speed of tech 24/7. And every single day, it's information overload. It's coming at me from all directions. And you know what? Bottom line, I just need the news that matters. So where do I turn? Local radio and TV. I want to hear from people who live and work in my town. They give me the real story with information I know I can rely on. So where else can I find out what's happening in my community? Weather and traffic, things that affect my family and my business. I want to stay informed by sources I trust. My local radio and TV stations. For the best entertainment, sports, news, traffic, and weather with no agenda and more reliable than other platforms. So if you ask me for the information I want anytime, anywhere, I stay local. Support your local station. Text radio to 52886 today. Furnished by the NAB and this station. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out.
'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up. Dick Donahue with you this Sunday morning here in KGMI. Got questions for me? Give me a call, 360-733-1200. You know, I started out with my weekly commentary today talking about the worst malinvestment, basically talking about some of the problems going on with colleges and the amount of student loans, etc. I'm going to now spend some time maybe taking a little bit different look at that, but also giving us something to think about, and that is what college majors can afford to retire. Among the two camps of the is college worth it debate exists a third, smaller, more quiet minority, a group that is afoot in both doors of the argument. Taking into account potential student loan debt and starting salaries of each major, its focal question is not is college worth it, but actually, what all majors succeed financially? This group takes a magnifying glass to the financial specifics behind a college degree, analyzing how much money graduates of each major are predicted to earn over the course of their lives. Their end goal is to make an educated guess, an estimation of one's career's net worth, about whether an individual could either retire comfortably or fail to earn enough to outlive their savings. Basically, it says we can never tell. We can never tell what you're going to do with your degree. This was according to Frank Smith, who's a professor of finance and real estate at Colorado State University and co-author of The College Education and a Comfortable Retirement, What Will All the Majors Make? He says, we can never tell if you're going to be one of the anchors on Fox Business or CNBC or anything like that. We don't know if you're going to be a major writer for Bloomberg. We just don't know that. But let's take an in-depth look here. Before peering into each major, it's important to conceptualize a little more of the set of the scene. The cost of attending college has skyrocketed in the last 30 years. Some quick facts from this report. About $1.5 trillion in federal student loan debt has spread out among a combined 43 million Americans seeking assistance paying for college. Since the publication of this research in December of 23, the number has risen by an additional $250 million, according to the Education Data Initiative. Quick division reveals that the amount is just under $35,000 per student loan per person. In April of 24, that's about $40,000 per person. But The average high school graduate will make $1 million less than the average college graduate over the course of their lifetime. Looking at income, the Pew Research Center says high school graduates make $22,000 per year less on average than the average college graduate. There are some prevalent pros and cons regarding the decision to go to college. The potential earning power that a college degree entails can be worth it to some, but not to others. It does not outweigh the student loan debt that comes with it. Smith and Agarwal use a $290,000 benchmark, which they refer to as a nest egg, that majors must reach in order to consider the bare minimum amount to retire. So let's break this down some more. According to the results of the study, by analyzing the average starting salary of each major, 60% of majors will not be able to retire comfortably, even with no student loan debt after college. When a $40,000 student loan debt benchmark is added to each major's equation, the study predicts that 80% of all majors will not make enough money to even have a 50% chance of outliving their money during retirement. All the numbers that we have that we can call trimmed means that we got rid of the top and bottom and top 10% of salaries because they didn't want to be impacted one way or the other, according to Smith. Interestingly, he said the government does not track salaries past your basic four-year college education. So by trimming the mean of each major's starting salary, Smith was able to refine his findings to be more exact. And here's what he said should work. First of all, let's look at majors that are predicted to have the most success. Medical professions typically pay out a much higher salary, but require extra years of schooling and often extra student loan debt taken to pay for it. Among majors that lead into this field, all but nursing and pharmaceutical studies do not have enough high enough salary, starting salary, to pay off student loan debt and retire with a 50% chance to outlive your savings. Nursing, with its base pay of $54,800 a year, can only sustain about a $20,000 worth of student loan debt before failing to make the necessary thresholds. So majors in this area of study analyzing what they do meet the necessary staggering level include athletic training, about $39,860, biology, a little over $39,000, chemistry, $43,560. Forest management, about $39,000. Environmental studies, $41,400. Food service, a little over $44,000. Continuing with the STEM fields, engineering and technology majors fare much better than medical majors. All starting salaries meet the minimum required threshold to retire comfortably, even with the $20,000 in student loan debt. But at $40,000, a few majors drop off. Again, at $60,000, at least. And one last time at $80,000, only four engineering fields remain: aerospace, chemical, electrical, and material science. In business, only a few majors succeed in their ability to lead a successful retirement: general business, construction management, data science analytics, finance, information systems, and supply chain management all pass the test. But that is without any debt at graduation. With a $20,000 student loan debt, only construction management, data science analytics, and supply chain management, starting salaries greater than almost $52,000, can still retire comfortably. By this model provided, no business majors can reach $40,000 in student loan debt and still guarantee a 50% chance that they're going to outlive their savings. The bottom of the totem pole, the latter half of Smith and Agarwal's findings can be particularly unforgiving, especially for majors in liberal arts and visual and performance arts. No area of study yields a high enough salary, a starting salary, to retire debt-free with enough savings. In liberal arts, this includes education, a little over $37,000, English, a little over $40,000, family and health sciences, a little over $30,000, history, just short of $40,000, journalism, a little over $38,000. Philosophy, around $42,000. Political science, a little over $42,000. Psychology and sociology, a little over $38,000. And gender studies, over $38,000. In visual and performing arts, this includes dance, a little over $37,000. Film and broadcasting, at about $38,000. For fine art and art and studio art, around $36,000. Interior design, $37,000. Music, a little over $37,000. And theater, quite $35,000. In a nutshell, STEM and business majors had the best chance to save the amount of money needed to retire with their minimum amount of money needed to do so, while also managing their student loan debt based on their average starting salaries. So, does the major matter? When speaking with Smith, it became evidently clear that while a college major can have a significant impact on their trajectory in one's life, it is not the sole factor in determining how much money an individual can make by the time she or he retires. If your parents give you more inheritance, if you save more, if you don't go far into debt, your odds of hitting a retirement with the amount of money that you want or need are increasingly dramatically. Retirement is not just how much money you can make and save over the course of your life. Inheritance can play a huge role in a person's long-term financial plans, but for others, it might have no impact at all. He said, do you realize how little money some people get? Do you realize that the average amount of money inherited by Black Americans and Hispanics is about $7,500 on average? And he said, well, for white Americans, it's $145,000. So there's a separation there based on race to some degree. The study itself serves as a good baseline. It uses an algorithm to make a prediction based on a set of variables, and yet the study doesn't account for the crucial piece of the puzzle, what exactly a person chooses to do with his or her degree. Any single journalism student, as mentioned above, could become the next star television personality or sports beat reporter or illustrious feature writer. And yet the research suggests that that student is entering a field that falls into the 60% category of majors who statistically won't make it. There's no saying what happens. Their salary could be far exceeded the average of $38,250 that this research speculates for a journalism major. But that's why Smith trimmed the means of each major's starting salaries in the first place. The truth is, this study is just a prediction. It's far from a guarantee. Another thing this research fails to account for is that a student even stays in the same discipline where they earn their degree. We don't even know if you're going to stick with your same field. Take another example, a music major. Who knows when they're going to leverage that and become managing record labels. All of a sudden, their yearly salary skyrockets, despite the fact their major foresees a much lower and more unforgiving number. So don't worry, be happy. College is stressful, which will never change. Picking a major in college can be even more difficult. It's the first major life decision most young adults are going to make as they phase out of their teenage years and transition into independent adulthood. So basically, above all, above college majors, the average starting salaries and nest eggs, there is something more important. Above debates about whether college is worth it, whether to stay in one field in one's entire working career, one thing always reigns supreme. And that is happiness. Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up here on KGMI. Thanks for listening. Don't forget our live shows on Saturdays, 11 o'clock. Got questions for us? Give us a call, 360-733-1200. Thanks and have a great week.
Voiced on the show are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a decision.